Hey everyone, I'm Yasmin Noori and you're listening to the Behind Her Empire podcast. I'm on a mission to showcase successful self-made women who share honest stories and lessons of what it really takes to create the life you want and build your own empire. If you've been listening to the show, you know, just like you, I've been on my own personal journey to build my empire. I started my business Bia to help women tackle their period problems and hormonal imbalances using a natural whole foods approach. If you're suffering from bad cramps, irregular periods, fatigue, bloating. Stay tuned because a little bit later in the podcast, I'll share a bit more about my company, Bia. But for now, let's jump into today's episode. I want to welcome this week's guest, Allison Conrad, to the show today. Allison is the founder and CEO of Array, the first functional beauty brand to target aging hair with a proactive, science-driven approach. The idea for Array came shortly after Allison saw her first gray hairs and was shocked that the only way to address them was with hair dye, and that there were no preventative solutions. She was using wrinkle cream and SPF to prevent wrinkles, but there was nothing available to manage and prevent gray hair, and that's when Array was born. In 2020, Allison founded the company alongside her beloved hairstylist and friend, Jay Small, who also saw the demand for such a product. From a daily supplement to topicals, Array offers a full line of clean, innovative products formulated with vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and a clinically efficacious peptide to slow and repigment grays. In this week's episode, we talk to Allison about the power of patience, why we shouldn't be so hard on ourselves, and how every twist and turn in your career will lead you to where you're supposed to be. Allison also walks through the challenges she had pioneering a new category in the hair care industry, how she thought about funding her business from bootstrapping in the early days to eventually fundraising later on, and what she did to create the traction and awareness during the early days of the business. Allison also shares how Array is the 12th company she's been involved in and the third she founded. So in this episode, she shares a lot of insights when it comes to operations, entrepreneurship, making pivots in your life and career, and so much more. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You and the business have come a long way. I know a mutual friend of ours, Lucas, connected us like in the thick of the pandemic where you were like shipping from your house and had all these boxes. So I'm excited because I got to have a little sneak peek about the early days. So I'm excited we get to dig into everything, but you know, congrats on all the success and new products. Love everything you guys are doing. So excited to jump into it. I actually want to start with something you said on another podcast that actually really resonated with me. You said, if there was one thing you would tell your younger self, it would be to be more patient and not to be so hard on yourself. Why is having patience and self-compassion so important? And how have you cultivated that in your later career and years?
Well, I'd say it's still a work in progress. So I haven't mastered either of those things. But I think the patience one comes almost more of like a macro level of patience with your career. I think a lot of times we see these, you know, 30 under 30, 40 under 40, like we see these young entrepreneur success stories and expect like, oh, I'm going to be so successful by age 25, right? I'm going to be this like a founder and sell my company at that point. And it's so, so rare for somebody to actually do that. It's like almost the odds of winning the lottery. So I think the media loves those stories and they're great stories, but they're not necessarily totally accurate or realistic. So I'm 43. This is my 12th company I've been involved in. This is my third startup. So this is not my first rodeo, but hopefully third's a charm, right? And this is the most exciting one that I've been a part of. But I think giving us that, I've learned so much from all those years and all that experience of a lot of what not to do, right? And so that takes a lot of time. It's benefited me and the company, I think, so much for having that patience with my career. And then I would say like the day-to-day patience, I actually don't have a ton of it. And I almost think that's okay. I think especially being an entrepreneur and working in a startup, you can't really have a lot of patience because it's go, 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 and you're pivoting and you're making quick decisions. And that's what you're able to be nimble and that makes a success a lot of times. But I'm learning patience as a mom. That's where I've started to really become more patient. I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, and my husband is the most patient human you have ever met on the planet.
My husband too.
It's like, you have to have that.
Yeah.
You have the balance. Like, I know. So it's like everybody brings their strengths to relationships. But so he's taught me a lot of just like taking a step and like taking a beat and taking a minute with our kids. And I'm trying to do more of that with the company and with my employees, but it is really hard, especially when you're wired to just be go, 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 and like always be on the move. That's what I would say about the patience. What was the other thing I said?
And the other one was not being so hard on yourself. I feel like when you're younger, we're so hard on ourselves, right? So what are some of the thoughts you have around that?
I'm still really hard on myself too. And I think, again, that's a benefit. I think that's what you kind of have to be as an entrepreneur, is just like, you have to be the hardest working person in the room. You're the example to everybody, and you care the most because it is your company. It's your baby. It's so hard. And it's like a type A personality, and that's a positive and a negative. I think where I'm trying to figure this all out is where it's the inner monologue and like the stress and waking me up at night and like worrying about, was that the right decision? Did I do the right thing? And that's so hard. I'm still working on that. It's gotten better as I've gotten older.
Yeah.
I think I've had, because you go through more of life and you realize like some of the things you thought were so dramatic and you're like, oh my God, that's such a bad decision. It's ruined my life. I'm going to become homeless. And like, you go down this black hole, and then you're like, no, that wasn't that big of a deal. I got through that. It was okay.
And I love it. I think a few things that stand out from what you said that really resonate with me. The first thing was, you know, this is a 12th company you've been involved with, right? Like, you have had, and we'll get into your story, so many pivots, so many experiences. And I think that could be such an amazing asset for when you do start that business one day, you know, a little bit later. And there's so many learnings you have under your belt, which I think is incredible. Because if I look at my younger self, all I wanted to do was start a company, but I didn't feel ready, and I never had an idea, but I had that like urge of wanting to do it, but I didn't do it until 14 years working at different startups and having many experiences like you. So I would also agree, if I could tell my younger self, there's so much you can learn that will benefit you when that time comes. So just do the best you can, learn as much as you can, build your network. So I love that. And the other thing that you said, which is so powerful, is having patience on a macro level. And I think that is so key, even in business. Like, I think all of our personalities, and I'm sure a lot of people listening in today are also type A, we're go-getters, like we like things done quick. But the reality is, like, big swings can happen, you know, with a little bit of patience and time. And, you know, that's what really is like the momentum for your company. So I love the macro patience, because it gives you a little bit of grace in that crazy day-to-day of like getting things done. And everything always takes longer than expected, at least from own experience building.
Totally.
So
it takes longer and is more expensive than you think. Not just home remodels.
Exactly. Funny. Very, very similar. I guess building anything. But no, I love that. It definitely resonates. But let's kind of go into your story. You also mentioned in another interview that you were always kind of the black sheep of the family. Can you tell me why you feel that way and how you feel very different compared to maybe your parents and your siblings?
Yeah, I love you doing your research. I'm like, oh God, what else did I say that you're going to pull out now? yes, I did say that. So my dad is a doctor and a clinical pharmacologist. My mom is a dietitian, and my sister is a pediatric ER doctor. And so they speak science and medical all day long. And I went to Duke undergrad, and you could get rid of any subject at that time. I don't think they still do that, but I didn't do science. And so my family was like, okay, that is different than us. And it was a big risk, but it wasn't interesting to me. That wasn't really where I wanted to spend my time. So I was an art history and econ double major. And then I went down this path of, you know, working. I worked at Sotheby's, and then I worked at Martha Stewart, and I was at Coach, and I was doing all these things. And I was doing a startup. I did a skirt business of my own. And my parents were like supportive, but they didn't understand. You know, they're like, do you have a job? Like, are you making money? And then when I got into Stanford Business School, they were like, okay, maybe she's just going to figure it out. Like, they never literally said these things. This is just like me internalizing. They were very supportive. But now it became full circle, because I work with my dad and my mom on the business. My dad is overseeing our two clinical studies going on right now. They helped formulate the supplement. And so it's very nice to have that. First of all, just trust that the people who I'm working with have my back, and I'm like, I can trust them implicitly. And then my dad just it's just such a vast wealth of knowledge. He does cancer studies. So he's just an incredible person to have involved in the company. And it's just fun to now be like, oh, okay. I do now work with my family. It's been pretty great. But I wouldn't, if you would told me this you know, 15, 20 years ago, you're going to work with your parent. I'd be like, what? Like, how would that ever take place? I'm not in the science medical field. So
totally. I love it. Well, now they understand all the work you were doing and the skills you were building, seeing the real behind the scenes of what you're doing at Array. I love that. And so it's interesting because you were mentioning, you know, at Duke, you studied art history and economics, and then you moved to New York. And I love that you also bounced around and had different jobs. I think when you're working at Martha Stewart, I was actually just watching the documentary. Was that like when everything went down with her? Oh my God.
Oh yes, it was. So I was working in ad sales. It was literally my first job. And I was in ad sales, I was an assistant. And it went from our magazine was like thick to nothing because we lost all these advertisers when she was getting convicted and went to jail. And it was just kind of tragic to see this where you're like, really? I don't want to get like political or anything, but it's like, you're picking her out of all these people doing white criminal crime. Like she's this like poster child for this, but to her benefit, like look at how far she's come from that. I mean, she like prospered after that. It was amazing. So I have such mad respect for her and what she's built. And it was just people that she put in that company. That's what I learned from her. It's just like put amazing people around you to build your idea and your company. Everybody was so talented and creative and really smart. But yeah, it was a wild first job.
I'm sure. I mean, I knew about Martha Stewart, but she is a major trailblazer. And I mean, like you said, even what she's still continued to create after all of that, she is really incredible. And at the time when a lot of women weren't even in those kinds of positions and running businesses. So I highly recommend her documentary. I think it's on Netflix.
I got to see that. Yeah. She also was wearing leather pants once to the Christmas holiday party.
Really?
I have a picture with her. And I was like, that is amazing. Like, I want to be her. Like, they're her Sports Illustrated shoot recently. It's like, you go. This is amazing.
I know. I love it. Well, it's so interesting. You know, you mentioned like you noticed the leather pants and you seem to be like a creative as well. So tell us more about how the skirt business kind of came about. It was a side hustle. It got traction for the most part. So I'd love to maybe dig into that for a little bit.
Yes. Well, so my mom taught me to sew during a spring break once in college. Everybody else was like going to like the Dominican Republic. And I'm like, I'm going home and learning how to sew with my mom. I was sewing skirts out of interior design fabric. So it was just really interesting silhouettes and interesting fabric. And in New York, I would walk around and people were like, oh, where'd you get your skirt? Oh, I made it. Will you make me one? Oh, okay, sure. And so then I hired a seamstress. I started a website. But this was, 2004, like before fashion was really online. And I purposely did it where it was custom made so that I wouldn't buy inventory until somebody actually purchased the product. And then they sent me their measurements. And so I knew that I was getting payment. So I wasn't really putting a lot of capital out into this project, this side hustle. And I still had my job during all of this. And that's around that same time I met Andy Dunn from Bonobos through a friend, and he had just graduated and was starting his pants business. And so I was like, oh, I make skirts and he makes pants. And like, he taught me about going to business school and like how much I could learn from going to Stanford. So that was really pivotal in me deciding to go to Stanford and going there.
Yeah, I was curious how the connection was made because that was very early, right, in his own journey. So you guys had a mutual friend. That were like, these two people are creating clothing.
He's actually an ex-boyfriend. Yes.
Oh, ex-boyfriend.
Yes. Well, so thank goodness for him. I know. And again, he literally had pants lined up in his apartment closet. It was really just when they were starting. I saw his pitch deck as he was investing, you know, trying to get investors. It was really fascinating. Yeah.
Hey everyone, it's Yasmin here. In 2020, I was struggling with some debilitating health stuff. I just got off birth control and suddenly I had acne, mood swings, breast tenderness, and really painful periods. I tried so many things, but the one thing that worked was something called seed cycling. I know you're probably thinking, seed cycling? What the heck is that? It's a natural way to support your hormones using four specific seeds throughout your cycle. The challenge is that seed cycling can be a little complicated to do and kind of time consuming. So I decided to make an organic seed cycling product that is so easy to use. We make it effortless for anyone to get started today. It's called BIA, and it's a super easy way to add something powerful to your diet to support your hormones, regulate your cycle, and bring back balance. To learn more about BIA and join our community with thousands of incredible women all over the world, go to BIAWellness.com. And that's spelled BIAWellness.com. And check out the show notes for our promo code to get $10 off your first purchase. Thanks so much for listening. And now let's get back to today's episode. And I'm always so curious, you know, that was really your first business, dealing with customers, managing expenses, and you really like took off. You were in Daily Candy, which was a pretty big newsletter. So, I mean, it wasn't like a small thing you were selling to a few people, but any learnings kind of looking back at that time, whether it was maybe learnings personally for you or from a business perspective, I'd love to hear about that.
That's a good question. And I think I was too scared to go all in, you know, because I didn't really have that much experience. I wasn't sure where this was going. This wasn't like my family's didn't have any background in business. So I was very, I would say not confident in myself. I was questioning whether this was a real thing or it was just a hobby that I was doing on the side to make some extra capital, you know, but again, I don't regret anything. So I wouldn't say I wish I had just like quit my job and done this full time and gone full all out. I don't think I would have been able to do that because I didn't have the tools necessary at the time.
Yeah. And the confidence, and you were still learning and, you know, understanding business, but what a cool, you know, little taste of it. And then you go to business school because of Andy Dunn. It's so amazing how there are certain people in your life that you meet that truly change the trajectory of what you're doing. And even looking on my journey, there's maybe like two or three people, and I've jumped around different careers similar to you. And I'm like, man, I just met one person who completely helped me pivot and think about something completely different. And I went down that path. So very cool that he really encouraged you to go to Stanford and that you got in, because that's such an incredible program. So at Stanford, you were mentioning that one of the biggest learnings you had was actually like this touchy-feely class that prioritized interpersonal dynamics. So I want to talk about all this, because I was going to ask you, what was your experience like at Stanford? But tell me more about this class, because it seems like it had a big imprint on you.
Oh my gosh. Carol Robin was our teacher, and I still stay in touch with her. She's amazing. But one of the first classes, I'll never forget it. It was a group, I think it was like 25 of us. And they said, we didn't know each other. It was, you know, early on in business school. And they said, okay, everybody put everybody in an order of influence. So you had to literally physically put people in a line based on how much influence you think they have. So from the most influential person to the least influential person, and this based on nothing, just based on first impressions of people. And I almost started crying. I was like, I can't do that. That's horrible. I feel I'm going to offend somebody. I don't have enough information on people. Like, I'm not doing this. And they're like, sorry, that's like not how this goes. You have to do this. And it was so intense, but really taught me about first impressions and how important they are, and how our brains categorize people and make assumptions and do things so quickly because they're wired to do that. And so how do we present ourselves in the very first couple of seconds to somebody? How we dress, how we look, how we talk, how we, you know, eye contact, all those things make such an impact. But that was just the beginning of like, oh man, such an intense semester about really understanding people and how, and understanding others, but then understanding yourself and how you're being perceived by others. Yeah, it was a lot.
And I'm curious if you remember, I know this was a while ago, but like what were some of the learnings you had about yourself?
So, well, interestingly, people did put me pretty high in the influence line, which, you know, that was part of why I was so scared, because I was like, I don't want to be perceived as uninfluential, right? Like that's going to be such an ego bust for me.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's really like, you're like, oh God, I want to be influential. Like doesn't everybody? And so it was interesting that people, you know, I wasn't always like the most influential, but people were putting me sort of higher up there. And I think it's because I have a pretty extroverted personality, and I'm, you know, not a lot of the more like less influential people who are just quieter and more timid, which is interesting. You shouldn't be less influential just because you're quiet. You're actually probably more influential because you're listening to people and taking things in. I thought that was really interesting. And I always have known I have a pretty intense personality. I sort of say what I think without really thinking through it. But that class helped me to know that and use that as a strength, but then know when to maybe keep that in check and think before I speak if I can, and not always like dominate a conversation. You have to listen to people. That is where you can gain so much insight and information. So I wish everybody could take this class. It was incredible.
Does she have a book or anything? Or she's just a professor?
I think she does. She does have a book. She came out with a book a few years ago, and she's not at Stanford anymore, but she does do like corporate event. You know, she's very, very pricey these days, but she does do, she still works in this field, but she does have a book too. Yeah.
I love it. It was so interesting. One of my friends, she has her own business. She sent us, we're in this like group text, we're all CEOs. And she said, hey guys, can you actually complete this anonymous survey? And it was all these questions about her. And like, how do you perceive me? What are some things that, you know, I could do better at? Like, it was very interesting, kind of like a personal brand questionnaire, and everything was anonymous. But I love that. I actually was like, I'm curious to do that. Like, how do I come off? What do people think? What should I double down on? So it's interesting to kind of understand that about yourself and what other people might perceive of you. What a cool experience in grad school for you to go through that as well.
And I learned feedback is a gift. So that was like a key part of this. You have to present it in a way that's helpful and not just critical of somebody or cruel. And when you're going to somebody about, you know, giving them feedback, it's from your personal experience. So it's, people can't deny your feelings. So it's like, a lot of it was starting with, I feel this way because of something you said, and getting concrete examples. You can't just be like, you're not good at your job. And you're like, what? That's not helpful to somebody. You have to give actual specific examples and actionable ways for them to improve upon those things. So yeah, I mean, it was an incredible
that, I mean, that's a huge lesson, because I mean, in business or even in life, like if you're working for someone or even your relationships, like giving feedback is so critical. And I love that you said personalizing it and also being very clear. Like, clarity is also what I'm learning in business is very important, because not you think people understand, but it's like actually being very clear, which goes to what you were saying, like what are the situations that you can share so people can get it. And it's really has unlocked a lot, at least from like a team perspective. And even for me as like a boss, first time running my own business. So I love that. A lot of great lessons that you can actually use in real life, which is always, always fun. So going back to your time in Stanford, there was also a pretty pivotal moment in your life where you went through surgery, and you kind of mentioned it was one of the most difficult times in your life. And I know it was like right when you were graduating. I know, I hope I'm not giving you like some PTSD from that experience.
No, it's okay. Yes,
but
it's okay.
Tell us more, like what were you going through at the time?
Dang, you do your homework, girl. I love this. So you are,
I mean, it's
really
fun for me. I do this for fun. I'm like, oh, it's just fun to like dig into people's backgrounds and experiences, you know?
Yeah, no, I love it. Yes, I did. I had voluntary wrist surgery. I had a ganglion cyst in my wrist. And so that's just like a little bump that happens on your wrist. And I couldn't do yoga. And so I was like, you know, I exercised a lot. And so I was like, this is really impinging on my life. And I'm here at Stanford. It has an amazing hospital. I have the time to do this. Like, I'm going to do this voluntary surgery. So they damaged two of my nerves in my brachial plexus. They did a nerve block on my entire arm, which was not necessary to do, but they did. And I woke up the next day in excruciating pain. My nerve was dying. And so I went to the ER with my mom. She flew up and they literally said, lift your arm. And I was like, I can't lift my arm. Like, it was horrible. I mean, it like very, very depressed. I was like suicidal thoughts. I mean, it was extremely terrible time in my life. And I just have such respect for people who are handicapped. It's such a hard thing to do. And it happens to people. And it's like, I fortunately was temporary and I got the nerve back after 9 months. But for that period of time, I was like, I might not be able to use my right arm. Like, that is a huge part of my life. And so in graduation, I couldn't physically shake the hands. So I had to hold up my hand to shake it. I mean, it was just sort of crazy. I didn't have a job when I graduated because I didn't want to go on job interviews. And I feared that people would be judging me, that I was handicapped. And so it was really, really tough. But I also, through that journey, you know, I had such a good support system from my friends, my boyfriend at the time is now my husband, and my family. And helping me out as much as they could. But just realizing health is so important, and we take it for granted all the time. When it's fine, it's like we don't even think about it. And then when it's compromised, it just makes such an impact on our lives. Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad it all worked out. But at the time, I didn't know if it would.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine dealing with that. You're also graduating, and I'm sure at Stanford, like everyone has jobs, right? It's a very high pressure. So even the fact that you didn't have something, I can't imagine the judgment that you had on yourself, and you're dealing with all this pain and like the shift in lifestyle. So it seems like everything ended up being okay. Did you just do, was it a time-based thing physical or did you do physical therapy? Okay, amazing.
Yeah, physical therapy. And you have to wait for the nerve to grow back. So it wasn't severed. It was just damaged. And so a damaged nerve can grow back eventually. But I would just go to physical therapy and they would just like move my arm with this like machine. I wouldn't, you know, because I couldn't physically do it. But I still have, I have a lot of issues still with my shoulder because of it. So.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. Well, I'm glad that you're able to still move your hand. And it seems like, you know, after that time, you actually ended up getting a great job at Blush. Yeah. I think Blushington was at your first job. And it's interesting. Maybe I can hear more about that because you mentioned you didn't really believe in yourself for this job, but the family was very supportive. And I think a lot of women, you know, I don't know if this resonates with you, like we all have imposter syndrome. Like, who am I to run this company or start this company? So I'd love to kind of unpack that because you ended up doing like quite well there. So I'd love to hear about that experience.
Well, and I will say Stanford is, not to keep talking about Stanford, but it is pretty universal that everyone there, male or female, goes and has imposter syndrome. And that's actually how you know you're around good people, because if it's people who feel like they're just like deserve it and they're amazing and everything's great, like those are not the people you want to be around. And so it was interesting to see that at Stanford, where everybody was so amazing, but also felt like they didn't belong. But yes, I met the Marin family through somebody from business school, another connection. Steffi Marin at the time had this idea for the Dry Bar of makeup. You know, Dry Bar was just starting. They had they only had 3 locations at the time, and they were building that business. And she was like, why doesn't this exist for makeup? And I personally was not, I don't wear a lot of makeup. I wasn't really beauty obsessed, but I thought it was a really interesting concept. And just seeing the success of Dry Bar, we were able to work with them in terms of like locations. They were very generous with giving us some information on their business of what was working. And what I picked up from them actually and sort of used for Array was this idea of these key people involved in the business. So Allie was the founder and the, you know, the creative and the hair expert. And then her brother was the business side. And then her husband at the time was the art director, creative director. We actually hired him for Blushington. And then they hired this architect who was very pivotal for the locations, right? They had to be really beautiful and aspirational and you wanted to go to them, but he was very expensive. And so they couldn't afford to pay him all in cash. So they gave him equity. And I took a lot of that as a playbook for Array, where I surround, you know, my business partner is my hairstylist. He's the hair expert. I'm the business side. His wife was our creative director. My dad is involved and my mom is involved. And so it really was so interesting to see how they modeled that business. My point being that sometimes when you're in a current situation, maybe you're not necessarily learning something from your direct job or the direct thing you're doing, but you're learning from something else that you're seeing and experiencing. So I learned stuff from what I was doing at Blushington too, but this was also really interesting to see as well.
I love that. And then I know, you know, that was mostly in retail, but you've always been passionate about direct to consumer. So you worked with someone. Yes. And you were with her for quite a bit. So I'm kind of fast forwarding a little bit, but looking at your time there, what were maybe some of the biggest lessons you had that you've taken on to Array since that was like fully focused direct to consumer business?
No, that was such a fascinating, because it was in the planner and stationery world. And it was, I mean, we didn't even do ads at the time. And so it was like incredible to be able to build a business. So I want to say easily online, it's much harder these days to do this. But what I did there and what I really loved doing was growing the business in terms of launching on Amazon. We also launched in Staples. And so this omnichannel focus where you start at D2C, but then, you know, you do have to meet your customers where they are. And so figuring out the points of distribution to get to the customers beyond the D2C world. So it's very funny. right now I'm working on launching Amazon. And so I'm like, this time, instead of doing it myself, I have hired somebody. Oh, wow. Amazon is a beast. Like, that is not something you want to tackle yourself. But then we're talking to retailers now. And, you know, it's very important to, again, use these lessons that I've learned from other companies and other brands, best practices, things I've learned, things I, you know, mistakes I made, and then try to use them in my current situation.
I love it. And I know, you know, we still need to get into Array, but I love to also talk about a stint that you had on the investing side with Jesse Draper. She was on the podcast as a friend and is also amazing. You know, you're meeting with different founders, and I'm sure just seeing the whole landscape of CPG and, you know, so many industries. Anything that really stood out at that time? Because I think, you know, shortly after you ended up launching Array. So I'd love to also hear anything that stood out when you were meeting with these startups in the fundraising world.
Totally. Yes. It was such an interesting time, and I learned so much from that. And I think the biggest thing, or two things, it was the focus on profitability. This was like sort of before this happened. So everybody was so focused on growing at all costs and, you know, top line revenue. And I just found that really strange. I was like, well, okay, that works for a certain amount of time, but then like, that is not a sustainable business. Like, this is basic economics. Like, you have to make money. And so, but things were shifting around that time. And I feel validated that it's now gone to the profitability side. But I thought that was really interesting, a lesson that I learned. And then also, we saw a lot of female-led brands, because Jess invests in women, mostly brands. I mean, she invests in men too, teams. But I noticed that a lot of women were creating companies and products and brands just for women. And then a lot of the pushback they were getting from male investors was, you know, that's only half of the population. Now, I'm not saying you can't build a big business only catering to women. That is, you can, and that's not what my point is. But my point was that women were almost like not thinking big enough. They were thinking just of their own specific problems, but not thinking about how this could be bigger. Whereas men, oh my God, they're going to think about everybody's problems, right? And try to solve for everything and think really big. So when building Array, I wanted to make sure that it was a unisex brand, because gray hair affects everyone. It doesn't just affect women. Obviously, societally, it's more sort of taboo for women to go gray, which we hope will change one day. But, I know.
It's and like also really, wrinkles.
But listen, I know. Gosh darn it. But so my business partner is my hairstylist for the last 10 years. And when we were developing the brand, I said to him, you know, like, he sees a lot of male clients. So I'm like, what do they care about going gray? And he's like, yes, Allison, they're just not telling other people. They're telling me, their hairstylist. Like, they're okay with a little bit, but they don't want to go full Anderson Cooper anytime soon. Like, this is something men care about. So although our business skews more female, we do have a pretty decent sized male customer base as well.
Yeah. And so what was that light bulb moment? Because you also mentioned everyone would ask you, because you're working at all these startups, you're helping so many businesses grow. And they're like, Allison, when are you going to start your own business? But you never really pulled the trigger. So what was the turning point where you're like, oh man, there's something here that I actually want to lead and do?
Yeah. Well, it was definitely from a personal experience of seeing my first gray hair, going to Jay. I wanted to get on top of it. And he was like, thought I was insane. Like, what do you mean? You like go gray and then you dye your hair. That's the only option. And I was like, that seems crazy to me. Like, wrinkle cream, SPF, exercise, like all these things we can do proactively for our face and our bodies. And at this time, a lot of hair growth companies were in existence, and I'm like, I didn't have hair growth issues. So I just basically created this regimen of 13 vitamins that I was purchasing and taking individually, which was, looking back, insane, so expensive. But I was trying to combat this, because we found this, you know, there's only one gene that causes gray hair. There's all these lack of nutrients and minerals in the bodies for people who are going gray. So we started with the supplement, and I literally was the first guinea pig to try it myself. And then we always knew we were going to develop the topical products as well, but those kind of came later. But it was really this moment of like, well, I'm experiencing this. Everybody goes gray at some point in life. Like, I can't be the only one who wants to be proactive about this. Like, so I think the wrinkle cream of hair care encapsulates it perfectly, where we're not Botox, that's hair dye, but we're wrinkle cream. And you can use Botox and wrinkle cream, which I do. I use both of those things. You know, so it's like, it's just thinking about hair differently as a more proactive versus reactive situation.
I love it. I mean, I'm sure there's so much education there, because I got like my few first grays, gosh, maybe like 32, but you know, it didn't faze me. And then I would say in the last year, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like it's all underneath. I'm sure some might be shining from underneath right now in the video.
That's beautiful. Looking. Yeah.
But it really well, quickly.
I'll get you some products.
I know.
Send me your address.
I'm all about the preventative aspects of life and wellness. So this is amazing. Yeah. And like, what a brilliant idea, because you don't even think about the fact that you can, you know, stop the growth of additional, right? Because it's the growth of additional gray hairs. You're not saying you can reverse.
Can repigment.
Oh, it can repigment.
Yeah. So we don't use the word reverse because it has this old school connotation of like, I have an entire head of gray hair. I'm going to take something and like the next day I'm going to have all black hair again. It's like, okay, no, that is not possible. But what is possible is that there's a difference between a white hair and a gray hair. And your hair basically just is constantly losing pigment. Right. And it takes time. It's pretty subtle, but you'll notice like Jay's a trichologist, so he can look in his trichoscope and you can see the difference very clearly between a pigmented hair, depigmenting hair, and then a white hair that's lost all pigment. And so the key is that to stimulate the melanocytes and the melanin, the color production, you have to have some in there. So the topical products as well as the ingestible products work to help preserve your pigment that you currently have, and then ignite some of that pigment to be able to repigment your strands, but up to a certain degree. So, you know, we can't 100% get rid of all of white hairs and gray hairs, right? It's a spectrum of like how much people can repigment, but the earlier the better. So we always say less than 30% gray is really the key time. It's always easier to preserve it rather than change it.
Brilliant. I love it. And so you're coming up with this idea, you're digging into it for yourself. And what was the timeline? Because was the idea right before COVID 2020?
Yes. January 2020. We all sat in a room and we're like, this is a fun thing. We should side hustle. And then the pandemic hit. And it was actually really a pivotal moment for us because Jay, for the first time, couldn't see clients. Like he had never been able to take time off. And he was like, I literally physically can't see people because of COVID. And so let's focus on this. So we developed the supplement in that time where you couldn't see people. And then as soon as that opened up, we gave his client base the supplement, the people who were willing to take it. And then we tracked them for 6 months to see how it worked before we launched the brand. Cause we wanted to make, you know, it was a hypothesis and it was based on science, but nobody had ever done anything like this before. So we didn't know what the results would be. But once we saw the slowing of gray hair, and then we saw thicker, fuller hair and just healthier hair in general, all these sort of side benefits we weren't necessarily expecting, we're like, oh wow, this is really something. So then we all committed to it full time.
Amazing. I mean, you guys moved quick. So tell me, I know you ended up working with incredible, you know, manufacturers. How did that play in? Because that typically sometimes can take the longest to find the right partner. So how did you find someone so quickly, and especially during COVID where, man, so many businesses were just even on hold. I'm like, we need product. So how was that for you?
That is a good point. Yes. So I'll go back to my earlier macro patients statement where, you know, because I had all these connections in this network, I was able to get connected to one of the top manufacturers of supplements in the US. They don't take startups, and neither does our topical manufacturer. But because I had a connection and I had this idea that was pretty interesting and sort of revolutionary, they took a risk on us. And luckily now we're able to continue to scale and grow with them. We don't have to switch manufacturers. And same with, so that we work with a clean manufacturer up in Northern California. And he was like, I've been waiting for somebody to come up with a concept like this. Like this is so exciting. So it was a bit of a kismet, like stars aligned, but also just having that network and those connections was really important.
That's amazing. And I feel like sometimes early in the business, like things align like that and you know you're kind of on the right path. Like serendipity takes a play. And like you said, I mean, so much of it is also your relationships and the work you're doing, the building the momentum, but it's like stars align on different aspects. So it's so cool to see that, you know, they were interested in that idea, were thinking about it, and you had the right connection to put you in front of that person. So I love that. And tell me more about how you thought about fundraising. I know you guys bootstrapped and I love the way you approached it. So maybe you can kind of walk us through how you've approached it you know, from the early days to even the business today?
Yeah. So I put my own capital into it to start with. I put $25,000 into the business, and then this model of giving equity to folks right early on. And it was both because I didn't have a lot of cash, but also to align incentives and really bring on people who saw the vision and the potential with the company. And so that was got us through. Gosh, we launched two products. We launched the supplement and the serum before we started talking to angel investors. We raised about $400,000 from mostly my friends from business school, actually. But we had proven the concept. We had proven product market fit. We had a website. We had products. We were selling. You know, things were working. And then we didn't raise again until we raised a seed in, oh my gosh, 2022, the end of November 2022. We raised a little over $4 million from Greycroft and Female Founders Fund. And that's, again, we had, you know, multiple millions in run rate and really showing that this was, I wouldn't say a proven concept, but you know, it at least had some legs here. Yeah.
Totally. And I love it. And going back to your comment, the early equity, you know, you put some of your money up. Who were some of those key players? I know you briefly mentioned a few, but who were some of those players that you gave equity to kind of get that first two products out?
Yeah. So Jay, and then his wife was our creative director. So she launched, she did the website. We also had a front end developer who helped develop the website because obviously we're going to launch online. And it is fairly easy to start on Shopify, right? It's easier these days to start a business than it was, you know, when I was trying to do my skirt business in 2004. Yeah. But I would say it's much harder to grow and scale a business today than it was back then. And so, you know, we had to build an amazing website. And then it was these key players, but it was just the three of us really in the beginning. And we were the marketing team. We were doing, I was, as you know, shipping products from my house. My poor kids were like, oh my God, mom, this is like child labor. You're making us help you package these things. But you know, we all did a lot. We were involved in, I mean, we still all do a lot to this day, but you know, we brought on some agencies. So that was a way to be able to not have to hire, you know, individual people, but you could work with an agent. We still do. So I think there's those like kind of key ways that you can set things up where it's not like too many people. We again, like from my experience of looking at other companies for so long, you want to be lean in the beginning because it's just so much easier and efficient.
Yeah, but it's good. I mean, some people, you know, before I even worked at startups, I didn't even know what agencies were or working with different contractors. Like there's so many ways to bring people on per project that you don't need to like always hire someone full-time or part-time. You can just work on a project basis. So I love that how you really started it. And you mentioned, you know, it's easier to start a business out, but it's harder to grow the business. So what were some of the tactics that you guys used that really helped that early traction that you guys did? Because also with your brand, there's so much education involved, right? You guys really disrupted an industry. So it's not like you're making a better for you water where you're like, you just drink this instead of this. It's like you're completely changing an industry. So what really helped you guys to prove out the concept in the early days?
Yeah, I think PR was really important. So a girlfriend of mine that I used to do ballet with growing up in San Diego helped us in the beginning, which I mean, poor thing. I was like, here's a supplement you have to convince editors to write about that's going to slow and repigment gray hair. She was like, okay, here we go. But she did such a great job. And so a lot of it was just proving it out with editors. We had a pretty key influencer reach out to us who was using the product. Her mother-in-law was using the product and seeing great results. And so I think it's all about authenticity. Like we're not selling snake oil. We're not trying to like pull wool over people's eyes. Like we're truly trying to create something that's science backed and efficacious. And so showing before and after, showing personal stories, testimonials, reviews, like people want to see that because that's the truth, right? And that's what you're going to, like, everybody's going to get their information from, not just like beautiful marketing. I mean, we have that too, but that was really key for us. And so we didn't do a lot of paid ads in the beginning. We did more PR, but now obviously we do paid ads as well. But just getting the information out from actual users and actual customers and clients is really important.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I've heard such mixed things with PR. I would say like half of the women on my podcast have said, you know, it's been critical to the launch. And then some others are like, don't waste your money. But I'm sure thinking about you guys, I'm sure you had everything in place, like the science behind it, the before and after photos. Like I'm always wondering why it works for some startups and why it doesn't. And is that maybe just boils down to the PR person you're using? Or what are your thoughts? Because you've also worked in this world in other startups.
I know. It's so, and I've worked with a lot of different PR firms, and a lot of times it doesn't work and it does work. Again, I think it's a lot of like kismet too, and just like timing. And I think, you know, we had this interesting concept that nobody else is doing. Now we see some competitors popping up and coming into the space, but we had something different to say, which I think is always, you know, important because they want new stories and new information. And I think it's really key for whoever you work with in PR is that they have solid relationships. It's all just relationship driven. And so you have to make sure that that person really gets along with those people, right? And it's not just like a fake connection, but they really have that authentic relationship, just like you should have authentic relationships with your customers, right? Like I think authenticity is just so key and oftentimes overlooked.
Totally. No, it's so true. That's good. Yeah. Relationship. And it's great that she's a friend, someone who you trust, who is representing the company well and understands what you guys are doing. And, you know, one thing, because also my business is in wellness. It's also subscription. It's a functional food product. So obviously similar to you, it's not something you see shifts overnight. It's more of a lifestyle and something you need to like create a habit and ritual with. And some people like that, some people don't. So how have you guys really encourage and created education around that? Because for you, majority of your business is subscription, and that's likely the most effective way to see changes. So how have you managed that? Or has it not been an issue for you guys?
No, it's definitely an issue. I think some people just are proactive and then other people aren't, right? They're like, I don't care. I'll just dye my hair. It's like, it doesn't bother me that it's potentially toxic and annoying and expensive, but sure. Then we have people who, I think it's changed a little bit in terms of the Nutrafols, the Vegamores of the world, like those exist that have supplements and serums for hair growth. And so people understand that this takes time and your hair doesn't literally grow overnight. It grows a half an inch a month. Like these are slow changes. And so I think that has been paved, but then it's, you do have to hone in on a consistency and time and commitment, and that it isn't for everybody, but that's okay, right? We're not trying to sell to every single person. I mean, that would be great, but you know, that's not realistic. But yeah, I think people are realizing, hopefully too, that things are shifting away like from this instant gratification, and that's like not life. You have to exercise and eat less. Like that's just key for weight loss, right? So although like Ozempics and stuff exist in the world too, but like I'm worried about how's that gonna change our perception of wellness and health, and what are the side effects? And like I think there's so much there. But yeah, I think it's a lot of being upfront though with that education and not over promising and under delivering and being very realistic about things and expectations. And so that everybody's just knowledgeable and aware, and then everybody can make their own decisions of what they want to commit to or not commit to.
I love that. And one thing you said, like, it's not for everybody. And I think some people might get offended if a customer or someone doesn't love your product, but similar to you, if someone's lifestyle doesn't fit for us, I will tell them as a founder, this might not work for you because you just want to go get Advil and it might take a little bit of time, right, to see shifts in your hormones. But I think that's totally okay to be like, you know, this isn't the right fit because these are the expectations, and that's okay. Like everybody can decide what works for them ultimately. So I love that you also have that approach, because I think I've met founders who take things very personally, and I'm like, don't take it personally. It has nothing to do with you and your product. You're not supposed to satisfy everybody that's out there. So
yeah, I think that's why we also work to develop multiple products. So while the supplement and the serum are our key, it's called the system, and that's our key product. Not everybody wants to use a serum every day, even though it's lightweight and there's no oils and it's volumizing and there's all these great things, no scents. But some people are just like, I'm not going to remember to do that every day. And so then we're like, we have shampoo. Do you shampoo your hair? Like that's a common practice that you're already doing that. You don't have to build it into your routine. And then, you know, dry shampoo, right? Like on those days that you're not shampooing, at least you're putting this into your hair and your scalp. So trying to integrate different products into people's lifestyles, whereas I think, you know, skincare has these like multi-step routines and people are used to that and starting early. And we're hoping that will be how hair care is going to evolve, where it's not just one or two things. Like you have to nourish your scalp to grow better hair. And so it needs good products in order to be the healthiest it can be.
Yeah. But I love that you have like different products to meet people for where they're at. Like you were saying, the shampoo and conditioners, and who knows, maybe through education and being in your ecosystem, they'll slowly convert and be like, oh, now I understand what other ways to, you know, support my scalp and whatnot. But I love the fact that guys have different products. And, you know, one question I always love, it's a newer question I love to ask all the founders on my podcast is, what is the messy truth about entrepreneurship that a lot of people don't talk about?
I would say like most of it is not glamorous. I think there's like many moments where you're just like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. And is this the right thing to be doing? And you're questioning it. But the highs make up for those rocky times where, you know, it's, you're realizing, especially for us, like we're trying to create a whole new category in hair care. We're trying to change how people perceive aging hair and give some control and some confidence. And so that goal ultimately is a really valuable goal. And so it's worth fighting for. I just had a woman submit a 5-star review and I reached out. I try to reach out to all 5-star reviews, although it's becoming harder to do these days, but yeah. I try to do personal emails and I emailed her. Her review is amazing. And she sent me this before and after, and I was blown away, and I've seen so many before and afters, and I was like, this is incredible. And she said, literally, this is life-changing. And so that those moments make it so worth it. But again, those are, you know, it's not every day that you're feeling those moments, and it's really hard. I think it's really hard to find great people. I think that's been the biggest challenge for me, is just beyond, you know, hardworking, really good at their jobs. It's the cultural fit. You know, we're a small team and it's built literally on our families. So it's coming into this like familial atmosphere, and that's really hard to find the right people, and your people are your biggest asset too. So it's the most important thing, and it's the hardest thing to do, in my opinion. It's also very hard to run a clinical study. So that's been the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life. But again, you know, worth it. And so all these things, like life, it's like, if it's not hard, it's not worth it, right? Like that things in life are not necessarily easy. So
I know, it's so true. It's like the behind the scenes, like even before this podcast, I did something really hard. And I had to like push through it because I couldn't just like be like, this is hard. I need to get off the meeting. Like I had to manage my emotions and my thoughts like real time. And I was just like, man, like, you know, it's just, it's hard, but you learn, you get those reps in, right? And like the more you do and you put muscle yourself memory in those situations. Yeah. And what's so helpful, at least for me, and I've done like hundreds of these episodes even before I started my business, was like, hard is part of the process and there's always problems. So even knowing that expectation is so helpful. Like this is part of running a business. And like my husband reminds me, he's like, you are running a growing business. This is part of it. I'm like, you're right. How lucky am I that I get to like deal with these situations? So perspective shift. But yeah, it's not all glamorous, but I love that you reach out to all your customers. You know, actually, I feel bad. I was doing that and then it kind of got out of hand. And then we had some other stuff, but I need to get back.
Yes.
But it really is the best thing ever. You get that review and you're like, wow, the fact that someone took time out of their day to write something so thoughtful is like, it blows my mind. And I always send it in my team Slack. I'm like, read this. I can't believe it. So it's always,
Yeah,
it's like such an incredible feeling. And it still shocks me to this day that people do that. So thank you, everyone. If you leave reviews for any company, it goes a long way.
I know, because most people, you know, skew to like write a negative review, right? Like it's actually not people's natural inclination to say something positive. It's usually like we're writing a review if something terrible happened. And so, I mean, thankfully we have so many more positive reviews than we have negative reviews, but it always amazes me because it's time, it's effort, it's energy that they're putting out into the world. And so it's everything to us, especially seeing those before and afters. It's like, that is
what
it's all about, is for people to really see the effects.
Amazing. I love that. Well, you know, what are you looking forward to next, whether it's in the business or personally or anything? I'd love to hear more about that.
So we're launching a new product in May. It's a little bit different than our current products. It's all sort of course, within the same sort of family, but it's a product that works with hair dye. So stay tuned on that. And then we are launching on Amazon in a few months. So that is really exciting.
Congrats.
And then we have a clinical study coming out. So there's a lot of exciting things happening this year that we're looking forward to, which is exciting for 2024.
Amazing. I love that. And I know earlier in the interview you were saying for Amazon, I'm glad you hired someone. Literally since we launched, everyone's like, when are you going to be on Amazon? And I'm like, I'm trying to just manage the like direct to consumer side. And I know it's a whole other beast. So congrats. I know how much goes into that. And I'm glad you're getting the support. So I'm excited. That's exciting.
Well, stay tuned. We haven't launched yet. So maybe check back with me in 6 months.
I'll keep you. But all good stepping stones, like, you know, yeah. the clinical study, getting on Amazon, like there's so many hard things you're doing that, you know, you'll figure it out as you go through.
Got it.
No, so excited. Right. I know you have no other choice, right? Exactly. You got to figure it out. That's being an entrepreneur, right? You got to make it work.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Get through it.
I know we're working on a product right now. And we got the first version and I'm like, this is just so not even close to what we were expecting. Yeah. And that's okay. It happens. But I'm like telling the team, I'm like, well, we're going to get there. We're going to figure it out, to your point. So it's just the mentality to have. And it's part of just doing business. But Allison, this was so much fun. I am just so glad we got to reconnect and see all the success you guys have had. I love everything you're building. So thank you for sharing your story and being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Behind Her Empire. If you enjoyed this conversation, it would mean the world to me if you would consider leaving a review or even sharing this episode with someone who might be inspired to create their own empire. To stay updated on new episodes or join our private community, visit behindherempire.com to sign up. We send inspiring and short emails every week to your inbox. I'll see you next week. And until then, remember, you're always in charge of your own destiny, and it's never too late to start your own empire.